Our society has a problem that has both temporal and spiritual ramifications. It's our attitudes towards marriage. We live in a culture of temporary marriage, where marriages are entered into, but a few years later dissolved. Then the people find other people to marry, and so on and so on. Our society has redefined marriage to mean things that, quite frankly, it doesn't mean. This is a serious problem because marriage does not come from us or the state. The state has no right under the natural law to define marriage. Marriage comes from God, and it is His rules that apply. Breaking these rules can result in one's eternal damnation, but also breaking these rules are bad for society. There is such a thing as the common good. A healthy society has what is called the nuclear family as the norm, where a natural-born man and a natural-born woman get married and have children. The father works, and the mother stays home, raising the children. This is how it was in the West, including the United States, and all throughout Europe for well over 1,000 years, until recently, when the nuclear family began to vanish. And of course, we can see the breakdown of our society as a result. But in a lot of ways, it's not the people's fault. We have stopped teaching the proper meaning of marriage. As a result, the last few generations have not fully understood what marriage is. They see marriage as a benefit to them. What can this person do for me? Rather than seeing it as a service as they should, what can I do for them? When their spouses become burdensome, or they get bored, or they find someone they like better, they end the marriage regardless of the consequences suffered by the other spouse, the children, society, and themselves. And they often get mad because they too will suffer consequences. Because marriage is serious business and should not be taken lightly. We find this problem even among Christians who now, by and large, accept divorce and remarriage. Up until not even 30 years ago, if a person divorced their spouse and remarried another, most churches would ostracize them, as they should. But then prominent Christians started divorcing and remarrying, like Amy Grant, the most popular Christian singer ever, who divorced her husband and married someone else. Then everyone was just kind of like, well, I guess it's okay. I mean, if Amy Grant is doing it, who am I to judge? Today, divorce and remarriage is common in all churches. Yet Jesus said in Matthew 19:4-6, "Have you not read that he who made them from the beginning made them male and female? For this reason a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined with his wife, and the two shall become one. So they are no longer two but one. What therefore God has joined together, let no man put asunder." The church needs to go back to teaching the truth about marriage because the salvation of souls depends on it. Our society has such little respect for marriage now that we have no-fault divorce, where two people can get married, then divorce, and there is not a fault or blame assigned. It is the only legal contract in our society that you can enter into that either party can break without notification or ramifications. Another part of the problem is that people marry for the wrong reasons. Our society has taught us through music, movies, and television that the reason we get married is because we are, quote, in love. Well, here's the problem with that. If the focus of the marriage is we're in love or I'm in love with them, then if one of the two parties falls out of love with their husband or wife and in love with someone else, they believe they have the right to divorce their spouse and marry the person they are now in love with. After all, if the purpose of marriage is being in love, then it only makes sense. Of course, our society says this is correct but refuses to acknowledge the damage this is doing to our society. The psychological damage to children over the last several decades, and how bad our society has gotten as a result. Other cultures, in fact, Western society had arranged marriages up until just a few centuries ago, even decades ago. A lot of people look down on that, but if you look at the success rate, there's no comparison. Divorce was practically non-existent then. Why? Because the purpose of marriage is not we're in love. Feelings are not required. It is the procreation, raising, and educating of children. We don't have to be in love to do that. But what is important is, do we have the same values? If someone comes from parents whose marriage is intact and the other from a divorced household, chances are they have different attitudes towards marriage. Are they the same religion? If a Christian marries a Muslim, what religion are the children going to be raised in? Are their backgrounds and customs the same? If one comes from a family where the man makes all the decisions and the other comes from a family where the woman does, there's going to be conflict. If one comes from a family that celebrates holidays and birthdays, but the other from a family who thinks such celebrations are evil, there's going to be conflict. Opposites attract, but after the intrigue is gone, they divorce. The families who arrange marriages take all of this into consideration. Now, of course, regardless of the motivation for the marriage, there are rules. Only your spouse has conjugal rights to your body. Which brings us to another point. Our society has such a lack of respect for marriage, it has perverted the purpose of sex, reducing it to a pleasure act rather than a procreative one. You heard me correctly. The purpose of sex is procreation, not pleasure. It's pleasurable, so we'll do it. But it's only done in a rightly ordered manner within the confines of marriage without contraception. And a marriage can only occur between one natural-born man and one natural-born woman, period. Oftentimes, people will criticize the Catholic Church for insisting on the permanence of marriage because they seem to hand out annulments like candy, which is often called Catholic divorce. But the reality is, people don't understand what's really going on here. When two people get married, one of three things happens. One, the marriage is not valid and therefore does not exist. Two, the marriage is valid with the natural bond of marriage. Or three, the marriage is valid with the sacramental bond of marriage. When the church issues an annulment, it is saying the first case is the case. The marriage was never valid. There are many things that can cause a marriage to be invalid. For instance, the marriage is not between a natural-born man and a natural-born woman. One or both parties is already married. A confirmed Catholic marries outside of the church without the church's permission. Also, both have to enter the marriage with the full intention of forsaking all others till death do them part, and the marriage must be open to having children. So if one or both parties do not intend to have children, it would invalidate the marriage, and there are several other reasons. The second possibility is that the marriage is valid, but it only has the natural bond of marriage. This can happen when a Christian marries a non-Christian or two non-Christians are married. Their marriage is valid, but not indissoluble. The Pope or a bishop has the authority to dissolve this marriage. This is called the Pauline and Patrine privilege. 1 Corinthians 7, 12-15. To the rest I say, not the Lord, that if any brother has a wife who is an unbeliever and she consents to live with him, he should not divorce her. If any woman has a husband who is an unbeliever and he consents to live with her, she should not divorce him. But if the unbelieving spouse desires to separate, let it be so. In such a case, the brother or sister is not bound. The third is when two baptized Christians enter into a valid marriage. This is the sacramental bond of marriage, and this is what Jesus meant when he said, "And what God has joined together, no human being must separate." Not even the Pope has the authority to dissolve this union. It is permanent until one of them dies. This is serious business. If two people have a valid marriage and they divorce, even if it truly is mutual, and then one or both marry other people, it's adultery. And if the adultery meets all the requirements of mortal sin and they die in that state, they will go to hell. Jesus said in Luke 16:18, "Everyone who divorces his wife and marries another commits adultery, and he who marries a woman divorced from her husband commits adultery." Now you might say, but Jesus gave us an out. He said, unless the divorce is due to marital unfaithfulness. So that means if my spouse cheats on me, then I can divorce them and remarry, right? Wrong. This is actually a bad translation. Matthew 19:9. "And I say to you, whoever divorces his wife except for unchastity and marries another commits adultery. And he who marries a divorced woman commits adultery." The text says except for unchastity. And other translations say unfaithfulness, leaving the modern English speaker to believe that you can divorce an unfaithful spouse and marry another. But let's look at the Greek for a minute. The word used, translated as unchastity or unfaithfulness, is porneia. It's where we get the word pornography. It means an immoral sexual act, which obviously could include adultery. But the word Matthew uses for adultery in the very same verse, which is what cheating on a spouse is makaia, which is the standard word in Greek for adultery. With that in mind, the text reads like this, "And I say to you, whoever divorces his wife except for porneia and marries another commits makaia, and he who marries a divorced woman commits makaia." Throughout Matthew's gospel, makaia is used when referring to spousal infidelity. So clearly, except for unchastity or porneia cannot mean spousal infidelity or adultery because makaia is used. So what does it mean when it says except for unchastity or unfaithfulness? Traditionally, the church has said it means when a marriage is unlawful. This could mean when the sex act itself would be immoral. For example, the two are the same biological sex, or a union between a man and an animal, or the two are closely related, such as a brother or sister, or one or both parties is already married. It could also mean it's okay to divorce an unfaithful spouse up to the point the marriage is made permanent. Unlike in our culture where marriage is entered into all at once at the ceremony, in ancient Jewish culture it was done in stages until at some point it was made permanent. This is why Joseph was going to quietly divorce Mary until the angel told him not to be afraid to take Mary as his wife. This sounds odd to us that he can divorce her before she becomes his wife, but it's because of the cultural difference. So no, if your spouse cheats on you, you do not have the right to divorce them and marry someone else. That could send you to hell. You might have the right to civilly divorce them and live apart, but you do not have the right to be with someone else. And if your spouse leaves you, divorces you, and marries someone else, you do not have the right to yourself marry another. This is hard, I get it, but it's also the truth. Real Christianity is hard, and I'm not throwing stones at anyone. I myself was married, divorced, and then remarried, and I couldn't take communion or go to confession for 3 years until I got all of that straightened out with the church. But what if your spouse loses the ability to have sex or just isn't fulfilling their partner's sexual needs and desires? Surely it's okay to have sex with someone else since they are not being fulfilled. Do you really think forsaking all others suddenly disappears and you have the right to sleep with someone else? Unfortunately, our culture has convinced itself that we have the right to sex without consequences, and we don't. And while each spouse has a grave responsibility to render the marital debt, the inability or even the refusal to do so does not give the other spouse the right to seek it elsewhere. So what if my spouse becomes bedridden and needs care? Can I leave and find someone else then? What do you think in sickness and in health means? What do you think for better or for worse means? Now, if you find yourself in a situation where you have divorced and remarried and now you've come to your senses and you want to make your life right with God, what do you do? Well, you do what the Bible says to do. You take it to the church, the Catholic Church, who alone can make an authoritative decision on the matter. And you do what they say. Unless the church gives you the right, you cannot remarry. The Catholic Church has the authority to determine if your previous marriage was valid or if it only had the natural bond of marriage and can be dissolved. Now, there's an issue with annulments in the church today. Prior to the Second Vatican Council, annulments were rarely granted. Today, approximately 80% of the annulments that are petitioned are granted, and annulments are not infallible. So what happens if they get it wrong? If they annul a marriage that was valid, and then those people go off and marry other people. The people involved in the marriages will suffer no punishment as long as they are acting in good faith and being obedient to the church. They will not go to hell or suffer purgatory for it. The people of the tribunal, their superiors in the church, may be a different matter, depending on their culpability for annulling valid marriages. Generations past understood marriage, therefore most were valid. But the reality is a good portion of the marriages today are not. Our Lady even said this at Fatima 100 years ago. A lot of marriages today are not good and don't please God. And the situation has only gotten worse since then. I'm not saying valid marriages aren't being annulled, but think about it. If two people enter a marriage and one of them is having something on the side and does not intend to give that up, that invalidates the marriage because the intention to forsake all others is not there. If two people get married and one or both think that this marriage would not be permanent, that this is their first husband or wife and, gee, wonder what my second wife or husband will look like, that invalidates the marriage because the intention till death do us part is not there. If one or both decide not to have children, that invalidates the marriage. Both parties must fully intend to keep the traditional vows at the time of their marriage ceremony, or the marriage is not valid. How many marriages over the last few decades do you think that covers? I think a good portion of them. And it doesn't matter if you wrote your own vows. That fact alone shows it's probably invalid. The traditional vows, for better or for worse, richer or poor, sickness and in health, forsaking all others, till death do us part, are what makes a valid marriage. What happens during the marriage is irrelevant. So chances are you'll get your annulment, and getting your marriage right with the church will help make reparations to God for the damage done to society because of the breakdown of the natural family. Until my next video, God bless.